Tides and Robert. So have a good day.
Hey, thank you, Farm Boy.
You're
yes, sir. For the next, well, I guess maybe 3 hours if we get lucky, maybe two if we don't, you're going to get to listen to me babbling away along with a number of interviews from Katzenjammer Keith McHenry, Food Not Bombs activist from San Francisco, Gary Yamane of the Citizens Police Review Board, the staff coordinator, as well as probably extensive excerpts from the week ago Citizens Police Review Board meeting, the first one without liberal John Malkin, probably the most liberal member of the board. He's history now. He's resigned. He's found the board apparently unresponsive and unworkable in terms of what he's seeking to get from it. We're going to try to interview him too, but we'll probably get a recording. Right now, you get to hear a recording of Phil Oakes in our salute to the Christian Easter Day celebrations, a salute to the Easter Bunny, and to those Christians who care enough to support those in real need.
Comes again to the circle-studded sky. The stars settle slowly in loneliness they lie, till the universe explodes as the falling star is raised. Planets are paralyzed, the mountains are amazed, but they all glow brighter from the brilliance of the blaze. With the speed of insanity, then he died. In the green fields turning, baby is born. His cries crease the wind, mingle with the morn. An assault upon the order, the changing of the guard. Chosen for a challenge that is hopelessly hard. And the only single sign is the sighing of the stars. But to the silence of distance, they are sworn. So dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, 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 cause we love you. Images of innocence charge him to go on. But the decadence of destiny is looking for a pawn. To a nightmare of knowledge, he opens up the gate. And a blinding revelation is laid upon his plate. That beneath the greatest love is a hurricane of hate. And God help the critic of the dawn. So he stands on the sea and he shouts to the shore. But the louder that he screams, the longer he's ignored. For the wine of oblivion is drunk to the dregs, and the merchants of the masses almost have to be begged. Till the giant is aware someone's pulling at his leg, and someone is tapping at the door. To dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, 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 cause we love you. And his message gathers meaning, and it spreads across the land. The rewarding of his fame is the following of the man. But ignorance is everywhere and people have their way. Success is an enemy to the losers of the day. In the shadows of the churches, who knows what they pray? For blood is the language of the band. The Spanish bull's beaten, the crowd is soon begone. The matador is beautiful, a symphony of style. Excitement is ecstatic, passion places bets. gracefully bows to ovations that he gets. But the hands that are applauding are slippery with sweat, and saliva is falling from their smile. So dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, 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 'cause we love you. Then the silver flow of life is crushed into a lie. The gentle soul is ripped apart and tossed into the fire. First a smile of rejection at the nearness of the night. Truth becomes a tragedy limping from the light. All the heavens are horrified, they stagger from the sight as the cross is trembling with desire. And they say they can't believe it, it's a sacrilegious shame. Now who would want to hurt such a hero of the game? But you know, I predicted it, I knew he had to fall. How did it happen? I hope his suffering was small. Tell me every detail, for I've got to know it all. And do you have a picture of the pain? So dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, 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 'cause we love you. Time takes a toll and the memory fades, but his glory is growing in the magic that he made. Reality is ruined, it's the freeing from the fear. The drama is distorted to what they want to hear. Swimming in their sorrow and the twisting of a tear as they wait for the new thrill parade. Yes, the eyes of the rebel have been branded by the blind. To the safety of sterility, the threat has been refined. The child was created to the slaughterhouse he's led. So good to be alive when the eulogies are read. The climax of emotion, the worship of the dead, as the cycle of sacrifice unwinds. So dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, 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 'cause we love you. And the night comes again to the circle-studded sky. The stars settle slowly, in loneliness they lie, till the universe explodes as a falling star is raised. Planets are paralyzed, the mountains are amazed, but they all glow brighter from the brilliance of the blaze. With the speed of insanity, then he died.
And that was Phil Oakes, from a collection of his greatest hits from the 60s and 70s. That particular song was The Crucifixion. Quite appropriate for this time of the year. And I'm wondering what's happening to those poor crucified folks at the City Hall sleepout who are getting the shaft every night. There were three tickets tonight. Two of them were given to Robert Flory and Sandria, whose last name I have around here somewhere, but don't at the moment have it available. And the man taken to jail was Pat Ring, I believe his name is, and he's currently cooling his heels in the lockup, his crime, sleeping outside after 11 o'clock at night. He's in jail with his co-criminal, co-sleeper Jimmy Riley, who's been in jail since Friday. They picked him up on Friday morning, and they held him on a $60 bail throughout the weekend. refusing to OR him, something that the sergeant who took him into custody, Sergeant Clark, crowed about. Crow and Clark, perhaps? I'm still looking for the proper name for that man. Clark used to have quite a reputation for kicking people on the mall, homeless people who were sitting there. He'd kick them and tell them to move, and I've talked about Clark in the past. There's one bit of interesting information I got from several witnesses that he'd drawn a gun on a skateboarder in front of the old bookshop Santa Cruz back when it was on Pacific Avenue, about half a block from where it is now. Apparently, Clark didn't like the skateboarder's demeanor or manner. Maybe he felt threatened by the skateboarder because he drew his gun and said, "Down on your knees and say your prayers." And we, of course, labeled that incident "The Kicker Draws His Gun" in the Street Shit Sheet when that was a regular published newsletter back in 1988. We're going to have probably a few retrospectives on today's show of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, where we're going to be examining civil rights for the poor in 1996, but some of that is a historical look. We want to kind of see what has developed in the last decade or not developed, and we want to give heart to the protesters of 1996 by showing them some of the spiritual roots or some of the antecedents of some of the folks that were their kindred spirits back in 1988, who fought very hard then, and did indeed produce some changes, the right to serve free food. They forced the city to set up programs to take off some of the pressure so that homeless people now are off at the Homeless Community Resource Center during the day instead of downtown on the mall, organizing and demanding the right to sleep. Indeed, there aren't too many people at City Hall other than the same protesters who began, although there are a few new ones coming in. There was a homeless woman who slept there last night. She was gone by the time Sergeant Clark began his depredations about 4 or 5 in the morning. But indeed, the programs created by protests, such as the free meal, which was created when folks began serving round the clock at the town clock in order to make sure that people had not just something to eat, but that there was a visible presence protesting the troll busting and the sleeping ban enforcement that was going on at that time in 1988-1989. It was protests that produced the certified kitchen and got Karen Gillette her trailer. It was protests that produced the right to serve free food at Cathcart and Pacific by Food Not Bombs. They have been harassed by authorities extensively, starting in 1989 when the authorities went after SWAP, Soup Without a Permit, through 1993 when Mayor Mike Rodkin, then not mayor but a council member, but still essentially operating in the same intolerant, anti-homeless manner, supported a provision in a closed session of City Council to sic the city attorney on Food Not Bombs to enjoin it from serving food without, quote, permits. And in San Francisco, that struggle has led to over 1,000 arrests and one conviction, mine. My case, I was sentenced to 2 months in jail, and I come up for, well, I've got to either pay the piper or get that sentence annulled on May 3rd in municipal court, and we'll be going up there to see if we can persuade the authorities that be that 2 months in jail for serving bagels and broth is more of a comedy than anything else, sort of a farce. And there may be caravans going up to that. And we may also be circulating a petition, which I began to circulate a couple years ago, a pardon petition requesting Governor Wilson to give me a pardon. Now, it's not really that we expect Governor Wilson to give me a pardon, but rather we want to inform people of the issue, mobilize their indignation, and essentially get people together in solidarity against ongoing abuses against poor people and those who are trying to fight for the rights of poor people. And indeed, Just Man Jim Costner is having a table on the mall that he's had, well, a couple times in the last couple weeks, which I see as the germ of a really good idea, a good expansion of the protest at City Hall. I think that City Hall protest is fine, except that it's so far out of the way and so isolated that most people aren't aware of it. City Council members successfully ignore it. Scott Kennedy juttily marches into city council with a big grin on his face, despoiling the very people that he claims to represent in terms of poor people. He always has some nasty words at city council for the activists and some whimpering and wailing. Kennedy is a man who claims to oppose the sleeping ban but has done nothing to change it in any significant way other than the small expansion where people are allowed to park their vehicles on church property with the permission of the churches under the auspices of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And we've talked about them quite a bit in previous shows, how the Citizens Committee has closed the only homeless campground in Santa Cruz, violating their November 29th pledge to campers. And as a consequence of that and the City Council's refusal to find any other campground area or even to stand behind this pittance fig leaf 60-person to the state park program, which Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connable were able to do as a deal behind closed doors at the City Council, we've got the situation we have now, a situation where people are illegal at night and where indeed troll busting is on the rise. Reports last week that people on the hill overlooking the town clock were attacked by a group of youths, and I don't have full reports on that. They gave reports to the sleepout at City Hall that on that night. I was unable to interview them, but it sounded violent, and it sounded like they were threatened, that they ran off very quickly, and that they were very frightened and upset. Again, they were trying to sleep at night, and because there is no legal place for the overwhelming majority of homeless people to sleep, they have to face this kind of harassment. What kind of harassment are you facing? What's your opinion on this issue? Why don't you give a call to 427-3772, 427 Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's us, 96.3 FM. That's what you're listening to on this radio dial, on your radio dial. Well, we've got some short bits here. Last Tuesday's City Council meeting a week ago saw the death of the voucher program, the program of City Council support for the Riverwoman Connable 60 People to the State Parks, which I was never too hot on, but never really opposed, except to point out that it was a diversion of our energies. Last Friday, I played Barbara Riverwoman's lengthy presentation in which she essentially succumbed because she felt she didn't have the political support. She did urge that the program be continued in a sort of a downbeat voice because I think she realized that it was going to be downed and doused and quashed and ended. One thing she didn't do, however, was try to mobilize the community around it. She simply did the politically acceptable thing of bowing to the inevitable. And to her credit, she talked about the sleeping ban and asked that there be a moratorium on it. Although earlier conversations with Barbara Riverwoman put us in a position where some of us were somewhat apprehensive because she at one point said she did not favor ending the sleeping ban. And in a way, that's a courageous position for her to take because she's an activist who is around activists who, almost to a person, feel that sleeping ban should go, if not in whole, at least in part. Most people favor that it should go completely. Some say that sleeping zones should be set up, or that there should be a moratorium on the rests for sleeping as long as there is no legal places for people to sleep. Some people say that there should be no sleeping ban, period, that there should be a camping ban if we're talking about tents and such. And some people say that trespass laws, littering laws, laws against urinating and defecating, provided there are bathrooms within, I don't know, a 15 or 20 block radius, are sufficient to cover this, and you don't need a sleeping ban, which is specifically an anti-homeless law. Anyway, Barbara Riverwoman seemed to be experiencing some uncertainties on this issue. And as a high-profile activist who is getting lots of media attention and coverage, this concerned some of us. And indeed, she, after some conversation, she kind of, I guess, decided that given the existing circumstances, she favored, if not an end to the camping ban, at least a moratorium on arrests. And she stated that at last Tuesday's meeting, which was good, now last Tuesday's City Council meeting. The one thing she did not state, however, which I found quite significant, was any support for the people sleeping out in front of City Hall, who are now there on their 46th day. And by the way, I'll remind you, the way you can tell how many days the City Hall sleepout has been going on is take the day of the month in April and add 31, because, of course, the vigil, the sleepout, started on March 1st, 1996. So today is the 15th, and so it's the 46th day of the sleepout. But Barb Riverwoman and Sherry Connable, although Sherry has been by the vigil, and Barbara has occasionally been by too, I think Sherry's been there a couple of nights, have never, at least at this speech, I'm sorry, this speech at Tuesday's city council meeting, she had nothing to say about this. And indeed, I've heard nothing in any public statements she's made that have been reprinted in the media, any support for the people in front of City Hall. I regard this as political opportunism. It's the kind of thing I was talking about when I expressed doubts about the process that was going on throughout the spring. And I hope that she quickly joins support for the sleepout, or presents us with some other ideas that might be helpful. And indeed, I called her and Sherry Connable before this broadcast, inviting them to call in. I only got answering machines, and I did call them late. But quite candidly, they know when my show is, that they know that these issues are likely to come up. And so far, it's been several months since either of them has seen fit to either call in or come in. Barbara came in on one occasion. So, other things happened at City Council meeting, too. City Council heard from a woman, and I believe her name was Nadine, and she has been fighting to keep her restaurant open on the wharf. Now, I don't even know if I've ever been to this woman's restaurant, but I ran into her in Kinko's, and she expressed support for the sleepers and said that she'd put up a petition for the sleepers, and she was also concerned that the city council not only was disregarding the rights of the poor and homeless, but also disregarding the rights of certain small businesses. And I'm always looking for allies in these situations, and I told her that I hoped that she could successfully keep her business open, but I haven't had much contact with her except when she came to City Council on Tuesday night, and she made an appeal to City Council because apparently she had been late in her response to a legal document, and the city attorney had taken that opportunity to, in essence, foreclose on her business and close her down. And she was in tears about this, and I thought it might be interesting for us to hear her and understand that the City Council gives grief not merely to homeless people, but to other small businesses that perhaps can understand and join together with us in some way. That's maybe a long shot. Business is business, and poverty is poverty, but see what you think of this.
My name is Nadine Hennard with Nadine's on the Wharf, and I'd like to address this to the City Council. And I'd like to start, Mr. Michael Rockin, with the word communications. For many years, I've written letters to the City Council asking to come before you, feeling that you're making decisions without all the information. I know that's a fact. You have now posted the eviction notice. I was representing myself. I can now tell you why they say a fool represents themselves. I did not include points and authorities, and I had an unlawful detainer go by. I never had my due cause in court again. The last time I was in court with you in 1993, I prevailed, and I'd like to know how many of you have read the court papers, read the decision, and checked the facts. I have, since a year and a half after being in business on the wharf and supporting the community and giving back as much as I could, I have not had a stay that I am not in some kind of conflict begging the City Council to please put me on the agenda. Now the City Council has chosen not to allow me to sell the business, not to allow it to continue to exist, and to slide me through with a motion judgment or a writ, which was rewarded to them by Judge Stevens and Judge Attic. I feel that not allowing me to sell it and talk to me, you are ending a business that was a mainstay, Don's Burger Bar. We're the last place that you can come in casually with children and wheelchairs and be alone and feel comfortable. I don't believe that you know what my business is about. I have not had the privilege of not being in litigation or not having a 3-year lease to get an SBA loan. Consecutively, for 3 years, I had 1-year leases consecutively, and as all of you probably know, you cannot get SBA loans approved with that. I asked the city to put me on the agenda. I have been turned down many times. I feel this is an atrocity to the whole community, And my interest is in the environment and in the war, too, and I've always been a part of it. And I'm heartbroken. I'm devastated, as my family is. And I will be leaving, and I cannot applaud you. And I expect, especially have a real pain in my heart for Mary Beth, Celia. I've never had the pleasure of meeting any of you. Captain Myers and Cynthia. I know who you are, but I've not had the pleasure of talking. Jamie Alcahama, who knew me when I was involved in beach investments and the beach area and bringing the redevelopment and Playa and many things that I've done. And I have put my nose to the grindstone since my family was allowed to pay $110,000 for Nelson's Grill from Sun U and learned the business, stuck to it, quit being involved in the local things even though my heart was there. To learn the business, and I've done that, and I have not been given the respect that I have given to this city. And I think it's sorry when a city council can choose who's in business and what's there. Petitions were brought to me by many people in the community, and I'd be happy for you to see them. I still feel it is not too late. Thank you and goodbye from Nadine's on the Wharf and her family at Nelson's Grill.
I haven't followed up on that, and I hopefully will maybe give Nadine's a call to do a kind of a brief interview with her on the show a bit later. She's been a supporter of the rights of homeless people, or so she says. It's it's often hard to tell who's in what camp. But the city council's cliquish attitude towards a number of problems, I think, is to some extent also at the core of the sleeping ban problem. Individuals who claim they oppose a sleeping ban, like Scott Kennedy, I wonder if some of their refusal to act on it is simply based on the fact that they can't make enough political mileage off it, unpopular activists like myself and others in front of City Hall sleeping out who have raised the biggest ruckus on the issue, and so he would prefer to officiate over the Adam Darling funeral and the Hillary Clinton movements and prefer to run missions to the Middle East and so forth, and prefer to have some political power here in this situation rather than deal with the issues that are brought up by people who he doesn't like much and brought up repeatedly by those people and brought up in finally not so pleasant ways after pleasant attempts to do so have failed. In other words, I wonder if the process of not somehow properly going through the inner clique affects not merely folks like Nadine, but also affects those of us who are trying to end the sleeping ban. We have a call coming in.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good morning, Robert.
Hey, this sounds like the Vicious Feel Free.
Vicious? Oh, I got a new silly name.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. Yeah, have you noticed of late, they seem to spend more time scrutinizing people's approaches than actually approaching the issue themselves.
Are you talking about the city council?
I'm talking about the city council. Mike Rotkin, in particular, every time he opens his mouth, he talks about the way people are approaching their opinion on this matter. You know, people are taking the wrong approach is the argument that they keep giving us.
Have a seat.
I think any approach is the right approach at this time, rather than doing nothing. They're doing nothing, and they're saying that our approach is wrong.
Robin, hang in there for a minute. Have a seat. We got a new guest entering the studio. Yeah, I think they, because they can't deal with the substance of our arguments, because they don't want to deal with it, or because they realize that the city people listening on the television, on the radio, and in the audience, I guess the audience doesn't care that much. They're pretty much committed to one way or the other. But Rotkin's spiel about the sleeping ban rings so hollow that I think, who knows, maybe he's getting embarrassed to say it anymore, or maybe not. You know, maybe he feels he's right.
Yeah, well, it's all, either way you look at it, it's a lot of talk and nobody getting nothing done. And then the only people that are trying to get something done, they want to bitch about how they're getting done what they're getting done. Fact of the matter is, the sleeping protest has made an impact. You know, being in front of City Hall, these people have had to address it, and that's the problem they've got with it. It's not that we're doing it the wrong way, it's that they're having to face this issue.
That's true.
Having to deal with this issue every day. It's getting to be a problem for them.
I think that, I hope you're right. I don't know.
I hope so.
Yeah. What's happening, anything around a street performing. During this hour, we're going to be calling Tom Noddy and having him talk about the street performers' guidelines. Mm-hmm. Have you heard any new reports of depredations on either musicians or performers in the last couple weeks? And have you any comments on the drummer's bill?
Shit.
In a word, yes.
This is pre-caffeine. Well, you all know what happened to Bob and all that. We're preparing for the court case on that.
A week and a half ago, he was arrested on a complaint by Alibaba, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to hopefully make a big stink. Well, we're, of course, preparing to make a big stink in the courtroom, but usually the way this stuff works out is we don't get our day in court, so we'll see what happens with that. Mm-hmm. The drumming ordinance, I think, pretty ridiculous the way it first came out. I don't know how it stands now. I didn't make the city council meeting. The reports I had.
It's pretty much the same. That no percussion after 8 o'clock at night unless it doesn't disturb anyone indoors.
Now, are they going to pass an ordinance, or are they going to have another meeting about this, or how's that working?
You know, I think they passed the ordinance on the first reading, and they. They're going to have a second reading a week from tomorrow.
You know,
it's of course a done deal. The only people who opposed it was one vote, Celia Scott.
Yeah.
And that's her credit. Actually, let me.
I heard some of her comments. They were really good. They like Celia.
Yeah, Celia's got some good comments. If it doesn't have to do with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, she's got lots of good comments.
Yeah.
And she's getting better. I want to commend her for that. In fact, I called her up. We have a guest in the studio, perhaps, who can join us on the airfield because he's about to run.
Okay.
You want to call back when you've had some coffee in your system?
Let me one last comment, and then I'm going to get out of here. Maybe I'll call back after I have coffee.
Okay.
But whether they enact an ordinance, of course I think the drumming ban's ridiculous. Whether or not they enact an ordinance is really beside the case.
Mm-hmm.
They do cite people for drumming all day long on the mall. They do confiscate their drums from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
In the back parking lot of Cathcart and Pacific, the police say they have a standing policy now for nobody to linger in the back parking lot. They do not have a new ordinance, as far as I know, that nobody's allowed to hang out in the back parking lot. However, the police are enforcing something that doesn't exist. So they can do anything that their little hearts, wherever their hearts are,
right.
Whatever they feel like doing, they can do it anyways.
Well, thank you, Phil, and stay tuned because I think we're going to be talking about this subject more.
Okay, good day.
Thanks.
We have in the studio with us a guest we had a couple weeks back, Robin. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Robin, have you been any harassment from cops lately, or?
Well, yeah, not really harassment. They busted me on my camping warrants. I did 5 hours, and they gave me a court date Wednesday to go back and talk it over with the judge. But I'm pretty sure you can do some kind of volunteer community work and. I've always wanted to teach high school. I got some college, and I thought maybe I'd teach a Wildcat class over at the high school, maybe work off my penance or whatever it is.
Has it actually been offered you? Can you do that?
It hasn't been offered me, no, but I'm going to talk to the judge and see if I can.
Which judge are we talking?
I don't know. I don't know which judge it is.
Have you had any contact with the City Hall sleepout?
No, I really haven't had any. See, I think people should be allowed to sleep in a Poganip. That's where I sleep. You know, and of course I'm pretty well hidden now. I got busted before because I was pretty much out in the open. But if you are able to get a hidden, Smokey the Bear pretty much leaves you alone. And even if you do get a camping ticket, I mean, you can. They have some kind of work program to give you something to do during the day. That's one of the problems. We don't have enough to do. Well, so I ain't worried about it. But
how long have you been in the area? Now remind us.
I've been here about 3-4 years. I don't remember. Some three, maybe 3 years.
And how many camping tickets during that period do you think you've got?
Well, I've only really been camping about a year, and but in a year I've gotten three camping tickets. But
and you've been sleeping out every night.
Yeah, I sleep out every night.
Now, do you have to change your spot frequently?
Well, when Smokey Bear busts you, yeah, you got to change your spot.
Now, were you do you think busted because there were complaints or because the cops were, should we say, combing the area?
Well, they kind of roam the woods at night, or roam the woods during the day, and if they find something, they go back at night. But they never kick you out during the day. They always come, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning and roust you.
Are we talking Parks and Rec Rangers here, or Santa Cruz City Police?
No, we're not talking police. We're talking forest rangers.
Yeah, so this is the city Parks and Rec, the guys in green.
Well, they said it is possible to get a Smokey the Bear badge So if you wear it, they can't bust you. Some kind of donation, I don't know what it requires, but they say it is possible.
I haven't heard that. But I have heard that Parks and Rec people, rangers, they're pretty notorious, not only busting people in Poganip, but back in 1991 when there was a vigil at the town clock, they were busy giving tickets at the town clock to people for very trivial things. Littering, for putting a cigarette out on the sidewalk.
Like, it's illegal to jaywalk, but if they got it in for somebody, like this one guy I knew they had it in for, and he deserved it. I mean, they give him a jaywalking ticket $500. I mean, people jaywalk in this community all the time, and that's just like walking at the curb.
That disturbs you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's like they were handing out punishment. But this thing here is what disturbs me. You know, this is, it's not McDonald's fault. I mean, the poor people just naturally seem to get fucked over by the system, but... here, these people buying at McDonald's. I mean, these aren't poor people. These people with some money. I mean, I never can afford to buy anything at McDonald's. But anyway, they got this masterpiece collection trivia challenge, has to do with their videos, and they got a bunch of questions. So they got three questions and then three possible answers, and you're supposed to scratch off one of the questions and then try and pick the answer. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to pick the answer and then try and figure out the question. So I got into scratching them off, and I found out that all three possibilities were incorrect answers. So there's no way you can possibly win with this game. I mean, it's not a matter of setting up a difficult question.
This is a fraudulent trivia challenge game by the McDonald's people, an expose which you heard here first on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Thank you, Robin. Let me ask you this. Have you heard of any instances of troll busting recently?
Troll busting.
Meaning like, you know, youths going after homeless people, breaking up the campsites.
Well, I heard of one about 2 months ago. I saw a girl with a broken leg. They said some black leather teenagers came in there with a baseball bat and busted her leg, but because they didn't like her because she was homeless. But
did you know this woman?
I didn't know her, no, but I knew she was homeless. I met her on the streets. But they were still camping. They just moved their spot.
Do you believe this is a credible story? Do you think you believe her story here?
Well, her leg was certainly all wrapped up. So somehow it got her. It wasn't a cast, but it had a lot of packing on it, so she couldn't bend it. There was something wrong with it.
Do you have much contact with other campers in the Poganip?
Not much. No, I'm pretty well hidden, and I go in there late at night, and I'm trying to stay away from Smokey the Bear. But
how about the Homeless Community Resource Center? Do you ever use it?
Oh, you mean the Back 40 where we get free meals?
Right. The Back 40, of course, itself has been closed off, but the place where you get the free meals and also the telephone.
Yeah, I get meals, and I use the telephone.
How do you find those services? How about the people? Any do you have positive things to say, negative, neutral? What's your feeling?
Well, I don't really want to. I mean, those people have a hard enough time without me shitting in their face. I think they're mostly con artists and crooks, you know. But they're trying to make out a living any way they can. But
are you talking about the people using the services or the people running the service?
Well, I'm talking about the general population. It's not like it used to be a year ago when we had our campground in the Back 40. It was pretty much a community, but now it's an awful lot of transient population. People just are moving through. I mean, it's hard to keep track of who's there and who isn't.
Have you heard of any increased harassment of people with camping tickets, let's say, on the tracks?
Well, the police patrol the tracks now. If you're up there smoking weed or drinking beer, there's a real good likelihood you're going to get busted.
What about if you're sleeping?
I haven't heard of anybody getting busted up there sleeping, but drinking beer, they busted a lot of people.
Well, do you think is it fair to say that the only people being busted in the main for sleeping are people at the City Hall sleepers protest, or do you think other people, including people in the Poganip and on the tracks and in the parks and under the bridges, are also getting busted?
Well, I know a guy got busted last night, but he didn't give him a ticket, and he was right along the highway, right directly off of where the Back 40 used to be. You know, they said we can give you a $150 ticket for being here, but we ain't going to do it. But they left him alone, but they did go down and talk to him. They threatened him, but they didn't give him a ticket.
Did he move, or did he...
I don't know whether he had to move or not. He probably did. I don't know whether he did or not. They used to make him move.
What kind of...
Well, see, they could just open up the fucking Poganip. I mean, there's plenty of camping grounds out there, plenty of people... place where you can put tents and sleep overnight. I mean, there's no reason it should be reserved for people to walk through there, hike through there during the day, and then nothing at night.
I have to agree with you. In fact, that was a proposal made by Jane Immler and homeless activists in the mid-80s when they were fasting at the town clock and protesting and marching and going to the Board of Supervisors looking for some kinds of changes in the laws.
Yeah, well, see, it's been proven already that oxygen is the best cure for anything you got. You want to build up your immunity system. And they know oxygen in town where all these cars are. You got to get out in the woods where all the trees and plants are producing all the oxygen.
So you think it'd be a healthier scene out there in
the
woods?
Healthier to live in the woods. That's one of the reasons I live in the woods, because I want to get all that oxygen.
Now, have you heard, about the voucher program that the council refused funding for?
Heard about what?
Program to send 60 people to the state parks to sort of subsidize.
Yeah, the state parks are kind of reserved for immigration of foreigners into this country legally, because you get a camp permit and just come on camp, and then you can kind of just drift on into the system. But you know, that's
I thought it was mostly for sort of weekend campers with plastic. You know, that's my understanding. What the state parks were.
You go look along the coast at the state parks like I did. Well, maybe it doesn't exist now, but I was camping in state parks along the coast in 1983, June, and everybody else there was German. I mean, the toothpaste package came from Germany. I mean, they were from Germany.
Well, I don't think these guys are immigrants. I think they're probably tourists.
Oh, you think they're tourists? Yeah, I think it's the way that they're tourists, they're infiltrating the system.
No, that could be, but mostly I think these guys have got money and they're traveling around, and or else they're kind of students traveling on the poor, you know, and then going back to their...
Well, the list goes like 5 years. You know, you want to get on a waiting list for those state parks. I mean, the foreigners have got it tied up for like 5 years. Well, it's a huge waiting list.
Most of the complaints that the city council received when it did this program, get funding some money to send 60 people per week up to the state parks.
Well, I know, but they already got
from
the
local
county. The county already got a lawsuit going against the city on one of the homeless campers up there that fucked over one of the other campers, one of the state parks, when the natural citizens come down the park, when the homeless campers did something to them. They got a lawsuit going.
Actually, I hadn't heard that there was a lawsuit, but I have heard that there was a threat of a lawsuit.
Yeah, that's it. There was a threat of a lawsuit.
There was a threat of a lawsuit that the state parks officials didn't like the idea of homeless people being subsidized by the city council to go to sleep in the parks, because they felt this would drive away the tourist trade, because people were afraid of, the vicious killers like yourself who are homeless.
Yeah, they're afraid. They're afraid of us. Yeah.
You got those roses or those flowers in your hand. I think you may attack me at any moment.
Yeah. I ground scored are pretty heavy through the neighborhood, and but anyway.
With some flowers.
Yeah, I came up with some flowers. Yeah, well, the flowers are the decoy, but.
So, what do you think about this program that they had? Should they have kept it? Should they have? Does it make any difference? What do you think of the? And you know much about?
I think they should open up the Poganip. You know, just to open up the Poganip for camping, because it's close. I mean, it's only within three blocks of the $300,000 investment in that back 40, those toilets and those showers. Mm-hmm. I mean, but when they've already got in all the facilities we need, and they got our food there, they might as well let us camp in the woods.
Mm-hmm. What about the back 40? Do you think the back 40 should be reopened to homeless use?
I don't think they're ever going to be able to do that. They got bulldozers and stuff leveling it, but. I just don't think if you want to camp, you should have to camp next to a freeway with all that smog and everything. You ought to be able to camp in the woods. That's what camping is all about.
What percentage of the homeless people that you know are actually vets? There's been a lot of talk about homeless people being vets.
Hmm.
Are you a vet yourself?
No, I'm not a vet. I was medically disqualified. I tried to be, but they wouldn't let me. But maybe there's 4 or 5 people wearing military jackets. But I never went and actually talked to them to see if they're actually in the military. But
a lot of women who are homeless and children, you notice lately, or not?
Well, there's about maybe three sets of kids out of the back 40 right now.
Mm-hmm. By the back 40, you mean the Homeless Community Resource Center?
Yeah, Homeless Community Resource Center.
The back 40 is, as you pointed out, probably a thing of the past, given the
community
house bulldozing that's going on.
Yeah, they're leveling it. They got bulldozers out there leveling it.
How many buildings have been set up back there?
Buildings out there now?
Yeah. Trailers do they have out there?
Oh, they just have one big contractor's trailer that supervises what's going on. They don't have any trailers to be lived in yet.
I see.
Because I think they had to put in some kind of sewer arrangement. I don't know what it is.
Well, the whole thing is a sewer as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the whole thing is a sewer.
I'm talking about the way it was handled. But well, anything you want to conclude with, because I'm going to move on to the next segment. I want to thank you for coming in.
Yeah, there's really nothing except that anybody that happens to know Doug, the watercolor painter, used to live out the back 40. A year ago when I was there. Anyway, whenever you don't appreciate what God gives you, he finds a way to take it away. He's going to be back there come tomorrow.
All right. Listen, thank you, Robin. And, keep us advised as to what's happening. I'm every Monday and Friday from 10 to 12.
Okay.
If you got updates, you can listen.
Do you want to leave this here?
I'm good. There are a couple of free coupons there you can use yourself for McDonald's, Duda Burgers. 25th of April, they're good until. For
hamburgers.
Mm-hmm. Not that I recommend McDonald's, all you ecologists. Yeah. Please don't call in all at once. But
yeah.
Hey, if you're hungry, you're hungry, and that's one of the things that happens.
Yeah, well, it's quite a ways from here, though, McDonald's, isn't it?
It's true. It's up on Mission. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I just was walking around.
Well, look. Thanks. Okay. Thanks, Robin. I'm going to roll this thing back in and keep on going. Thank you. That was Robin Hood, one of our correspondents from the field, giving us kind of an update on what's been happening out in the great beyond. If you want to join this conversation, or you have a conversation of your own you want to start, give a call to 427-3772, 427-3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to 96.3 FM. Hopefully we will be continuing, although at the Free Radio Santa Cruz meeting last night, it appears we got some pessimistic reports from those who'd been at the hearing that Free Radio Berkeley had on Friday. And that hearing was before Federal Judge Claudia Wilken, in which the FCC is trying to enjoin or close down, prohibit Free Radio Berkeley and Stephen Dunifer from broadcasting. And there was a report. Kind of cut off from those who wanted to be in it. It was difficult to get into the courtroom, the federal courtroom in Oakland where this hearing was held. The government attorneys were arguing that, one, that this court had no authority to hear challenges to the constitutionality of, quote, regulations, and that kind of challenge had to happen in a higher court. This apparently was an argument that violated what they'd argued a year before, but hey, that's the government for you. Then they also were arguing that no waiver had been applied for. Normally you need, 100 watts, essentially like $100,000 to get a station. You have to pay, and there was, in essence, a lot of money, not so much to the FCC, but in order to get the equipment necessary to do a big station. And one of the arguments of Free Radio Berkeley, and I suppose one of the arguments other free radios will have, is that poor people are discriminated against and excluded, and that therefore content is affected because it's only rich folks with big stations that can get in there. So that was the complaint, and those are the arguments made by the government. Actually, that's the argument made by the Free Radio Berkeley people. The argument in response to that by the government was, oh no, you can apply for a waiver if you want. That is to say, you can try to get a special dispensation, and that Free Radio Berkeley had not applied for that dispensation, and therefore it's their fault if they didn't get a waiver, and there is a process, and so forth and so on. And the judge wanted to get some facts from Free Radio Berkeley about the specifics, about how poor people and programming for the poor was excluded. And unfortunately, Free Radio Berkeley, though it had experts who were willing to testify on the issue, it did not have the facts readily available for Judge Wilken at the time. And so that was a weakness in the Free Radio Berkeley case. And she took it under submission. She took it under advisement. She didn't make any decision, but Attorney Ed Fry from Santa Cruz had the opinion that she was going to rule in favor of the FCC because there was inadequate fact background to show that poor people and poor broadcasters and programming for poor people was excluded. But that was just his opinion, and also the issue is can, of course, be appealed, and I'm sure will be appealed. Hello?
Hello, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz at last.
Of course I am.
This sounds like
about time.
Skidmark Bob. I'm sorry, Bob, we're having a little phone problem here, but I think we're clearing it up.
You got to put a tape box on the...
We tried that. I think I'm going to just use the old method of hanging it over the edge of the table. We have unusual methods of trying to deal with a phone here, folks. We actually need a phone holder, but that's another matter.
Well, I just woke up. I don't know if you got an update from last night's City Hall vigil.
I did hear that there were three tickets issued, and there was one arrest in those three tickets. Who were the? It was Robert and Sandria and Pat, right?
Pat got taken away.
And that leaves two political prisoners in jail at the moment.
Yeah, well, another interesting thing that happened is we were sitting there talking with Sergeant Clark and Officer Pendleton. This huge light out of the sky just went flying by.
Oh, yeah, that's
about
right.
3 in the morning. I don't know what the hell it was. If anybody knows, call in.
Yeah, even the police officers who aren't prone to flights of fancy like you crazy activists who are always taking drugs and playing strange songs on the mall saw this bizarre thing that rose and fell over the Civic Auditorium. So perhaps it's a sign that Mike Rotkin had better change his ways.
Well, that reminds me. There's another camp out up in front of campus where nobody's getting camping tickets. People slept there last night and have been sleeping there since last Tuesday.
Do they have a permit?
No.
Well, that sounds like selective enforcement to me. I would get the names of those people so they can testify in any tickets that are given at City Hall and show selective enforcement.
Yeah, they're calling for more and more people to come out there at the base of campus to protest education, not incarceration. And they're supposed to have a rally tomorrow at 2. Hmm. And very own Mike Rotkin's supposed to speak there.
Oh, of course.
Mr. Bigot himself. Mm-hmm. And other people, I think maybe Angela Davis might be there too. So
Angela and Mike together again at last?
Yeah. So they're calling for people to come out and rally against this and what's going on campus. There's a gentleman that's been chained to the fence for a while, or chained to the side for a while.
What is his name?
Jake. I forget his last name. Anyway, Jake is his name, and he's been there for a while. And one other point of interest is tomorrow, 9 a.m., Board of Supervisors meeting. The county is camp is going to ask for $250,000.
Quite an increase from what they asked for last year. What was it, $15,000?
Is that what they asked for?
Something like that.
Yeah. I guess, you know, all that money they're not going to spend on homeless people, they're going to spend on marijuana suppression. So. $250,000, so that's another urging people to come out to speak their mind. And tomorrow at 9 a.m. early, get up and head on down to the county building.
Actually, there actually will be a vote by the supervisors on whether to take this money?
I'm not sure what exactly is going to happen tomorrow. I know they're going to be, this issue is coming up on the chopping block. They may, I don't know.
Well, for those people who are in the city who want to, put their views before the supervisor who handles the city, you can talk to Supervisor Marty Wormhout, and she will be at the food court at 5 o'clock this afternoon on Monday today. So if you're interested in, getting a kind of an advance jump on the Board of Soups, come to the food court at 5 o'clock this afternoon and tell Marty Wormhout to say no to camp. And also, I'm going to suggest that Marty Wormhout have a voice in stopping the harassment of homeless and campers in the county, where there's also this practice going on. Even though there is no countywide camping ban, the sheriffs have been regularly misinforming people that there is such a ban and harassing them anyway. And I think Marty Wormhout has to see that this stops, and also she has pressure that she can bring to bear on the city to start engaging in some real solutions to these questions. So again, 5 o'clock at the food court, which is right across from Friendship Corner at Cathcart and Pacific. And Logos Bookstore is where you can talk to your supervisor 5 o'clock today.
Or tomorrow, 9 a.m.
Or tomorrow.
Supervisor.
9 a.m.
Bring your toy pistol.
right, 701 Ocean. I was thinking what we need is about 15 6-year-olds with toy pistols raiding the Board of Supervisors. So if anybody has, maybe you can have your baby, Bob.
With Zapatista masks on.
With Zapatista masks
go.
Terrorizing the supervisors.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to go.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And you're back with Free Radio Santa Cruz's favorite talk show host, Bathrobe Spear, Robert. This is Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. Again, the bathrobe has to do with sleep-out protests, which I have occasionally attended, usually for brief periods of time, to provide coffee. But occasionally I've even gotten a ticket. Now, that hasn't happened recently, but if you stay tuned, it may actually happen again. I do encourage people to... Ooh, we got an incoming call. To go down to the sleep... to the sleepout at City Hall, which is happening not only every night, but during the day. In fact, sometimes it's more crucial to be there during the day because there are so few people there and there's so much harassment potential.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I was prompted to call by the incredible double standard that the mayor of Santa Cruz is testifying to.
You're talking about
to the protests in front of UC Santa Cruz being unticketed, and the protests in front of the City Hall being ruthlessly ticketed.
Indeed. Well, that's pretty clear.
There is a level, there's a point where one, I think, is prompted to speak out if one believes in any kind of basic principle at all. And I think the point is being reached with many of us in this community and this year, where the double standard is becoming so apparent, the hypocrisy is becoming so apparent. You made a comment earlier on your show that things rarely get off the ground if they don't go through the proper channels. And what the problem is, to a large degree, as far as I can see, is there are certain people that don't want to be upstaged. They like to set the agenda. They like to set the tone. And they don't want to be prompted by outside influences.
That's kind of the a very articulate way of putting what I was struggling at in my kind of clumsy discussion of Scott Kennedy.
And it doesn't matter how inspiring those outside influences are. If they are not co-opted, then they're going to be marginalized. Now, there's a point in this political process where it is important to challenge that hypocrisy. Now, this hypocrisy about selective enforcement, and that is the proper term, of selectively enforcing one demonstration and not another, and the mayor choosing sides with one demonstration and expressing no redeeming value whatsoever. For how long has that demonstration gone in front of City Hall?
46 days.
46 days. No redeeming value whatsoever from the mouth of the mayor and other people in bureaucratic positions of authority who would like to be taken as leaders, but who really are, and I'm going to use the word, cowards, who are afraid of inspiration, who are afraid of change, who are afraid of the very principles which they claim to adhere to.
Well, I would call them.
It literally has reached a point of disgustingness.
I would call them cowards and liars, Bob.
Huh?
I would call them cowards and liars, actually.
Yeah, those things, you know, those are strong words, and they're not PC words. Coward, liar, hypocrite, fraud, posturing. But that is, as far as I can see, and I'll qualify it for myself as in my opinion, that is what I see. I see cowardice, hypocrisy, fear of being upstaged, the desire to co-opt, and or the feeling that if you will not be co-opted, that we can marginalize you and render you ineffective. So there is this prevailing attitude in Santa Cruz where certain people who are in positions of authority and power, and this is pretty much across the board as far as I can see, who are entrenched, feel that they cannot be effectively challenged, so therefore they can say and do whatever they want. So therefore harassment becomes policy, becomes political policy, and the police force, including the sheriff and the DA's office, are used to harass those that are not politically favorable. And, you know, where is the bottom line principle? Where do people finally say, this is enough? Or do we just accept this double standard? You know, I wonder sometimes whether most of us really, you know, we have these ideals, you know, liberty and justice for all, but I wonder whether most of us really, what we really want is a double standard.
Well, it certainly is more convenient for those who are in positions of privilege to be able to use that privilege, isn't it? Whether it's white skin privilege or male privilege or money privilege. No question. Well, you have a show today at 1 today, don't you, Bob?
Yeah, I certainly do, yeah.
And I hope you'll be discussing the issues of, I guess, because I don't have time for it now, but I hope on your show we'll hear about the, well, the Sentinel did some sort of thumbs down for the city council's turning down the idea of a pedestrian mall or something.
Well, that's pretty impressive. I'll give the editorial board, which is now three people, a thumbs up for that minor display of courage.
No, actually, they supported.
Oh, they supported.
They supported the no pedestrian mall idea.
Okay, now that idea of a pedestrian mall once a month did not emanate from myself.
Right,
Bill LeBron,
but I can't give you time to go into it now because I've got to make a couple calls. But I'm encouraging listeners to call in and listen to your show at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I want to get into resolution 11495 today, and that is when the Board of Supervisors procedurally exonerated Art Danner, district attorney, for directing time cards to be falsified, overlapping his election. There's a level of blatancy. And this thing about Danner has got such direct and symbolic importance.
Well, don't forget to also talk about what the city council is doing at the pedestrian mall. I'm gonna run on you now.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye.
And we are still at 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, struggling to get our phone into its appropriate place. We were speaking last time with Traveling Tom Noddy, and Tom has been a figure around Santa Cruz for the last two decades of some note in the street performing community, and an activist as well around these issues. And we talked about the origins of the Street Performers Guidelines. Tom, I'm hoping, is listening to the show now, and perhaps we'll call in, or we can try to call him, but perhaps he can call us at 427-3772. And we're going to pick up that conversation and talk about, well, there's an incoming call. Could that be our man?
Hi there. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello, Robert. This is Tom Nutty.
Hi, Tom. Good to hear you. How you been?
Glad you repeated the number. I didn't have it handy, and I thought you were going to tell me to call in and then not tell me what number to call.
I've been accused of that in the past, yes. Well, no, it looks like you made it in, and I guess we were talking last week about some of this, of course, is very interesting background, just that has much broader application, but the specific cause for our conversation was the what I call the Drum Out the Drummers Ordinance, which is restricting playing of percussion instruments essentially between the hours of 8 in the evening and 10 in the morning, which I guess is an expansion from the current situation, which is, I guess, midnight to 8 in the morning?
No, 10 to
10 to 8. 10 to, I've heard different things. So maybe you can recap what you were discussing last week in terms of the origins of and the, again, a recapitulation of the Street Performers
okay.
Guidelines.
Okay, let me briefly, and I will try and be brief on this recapitulation on the assumption that some people were listening, but for those who were not. Let me say first that I came into Santa Cruz in 1977 living in my van. I got tickets for living in my van, illegal camping, got busted out at Scott Creek. It turned into a big political hubbub that we have ultimately won in court. But
you won, but you didn't overturn any laws.
That's correct. Exactly. We didn't.
Essentially, it was jury nullification, right?
Essentially, it was. The jury was aware of the facts, and the facts suggested that we had violated the law as it was written, and the jury nonetheless found us not guilty.
And we're talking about a county law rather than a city law, though in fact it was the enforcement of the city's sleeping ban that drove you and many others out into the county, right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And so that was 1977. Mm-hmm. And then, and so I became active in town organizing around that issue. And after Scott Creek was resolved, there was some other thing where they the county was some new conservatives came in and attempted to cut people off of food stamps if they didn't have any place to live, using food as a weapon to drive poor people out of town. I was involved in organizing around that.
And you were successful in fighting that, were you not?
Yeah, we won that in court. They couldn't do it. They knew they couldn't do it. They just wanted to see if they could scare enough people out of town, because Santa Cruz was tough, so you wouldn't come here for your food stamps and you'd leave town. And then they would lose the case, but people will have, you know, left town.
Gotten the message.
But I think we kept enough people informed that, you know, just hang in there a few more days. The court case is coming up, and don't let them scare you out.
That was 78 or 79 thereabouts?
That was 79, I think. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing that happened was this Clean Up the Mall effort, which was, you know, similar to the more recent efforts at, you know, passing ordinances and toughening up, you know, the image of Santa Cruz out there in the counterculture community, so that people would be discouraged from thinking of Santa Cruz when they think of destinations. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we organized a cleanup, actually. We decided to take them literally, and we had volunteers who came to our, well, we put on benefit shows, and people who wanted to get in, if they didn't have money, could volunteer to join us in the literal cleaning up of the streets and the campsites along the river and such. And another successful program. But involved in that mall cleanup came this street performing band proposal. I was a street performer doing my puppet show and bubble magic out on the streets. And with that, I ended up organizing street performers, or helping to organize street performers, and ended up negotiating with merchants and their representatives. And through that process came up with a series of guidelines for street performers, voluntary guidelines, and that was our proposal. Instead of restrictive, inflexible laws to deal with these matters, we thought it would be better if we could write down for them the unwritten rules of street performing, write down for them and for ourselves, because, you know, I don't know, as I've said to street performers in the past, it's similar, you know, when you're hitchhiking on a freeway, you have to stay on the freeway entrance, can't pass that sign if you want to avoid the cop trip. And when you sometimes, you know, Santa Barbara, some of the places, you'll end up with a long string of hitchhikers all in the same spot, you know. And when a new guy gets dropped off, sometimes they'll think, well, I'll get in front of everybody, put my thumb out, I'll catch the first ride.
Yeah.
Well, there's an unwritten rule. Nobody's ever written this down, but goddammit, it's a rule. You get it at the end of the line. That's the rule, you know? And there are similar rules for street performers. You know, you can't, I don't know, take the good spot and stay there all day. You can't set up next to somebody that's already set up. These things have never been written down, and sometimes, therefore, people, other performers will violate them. They'll set up right across the street from where you're playing and try and, you know, flood out your trip or draw your audience away. Nobody's ever written it down, but this has happened for thousands of years. There are unwritten rules. Let's write them down for ourselves and for the merchants to see if we can cool them out and show them, you know, that there's a way to resolve this thing that we've been resolving. I mean, street performing is at least as old as stores. We've had this problem for a long time. So we came up with the voluntary guidelines. It was approved by street performers, consensus of 35 street performers. It was subsequently approved by this merchants group and approved by the city council at that time, which was the conservative city council at that time. And since then, there have been several efforts to address street performer problems in terms of laws, etc., but each time the guidelines were brought forward, and I've reappeared and helped them to see again that the reason we agreed to the guidelines in the first place was because it worked best for everybody.
Can you recapitulate those guidelines for us again?
Sure. Let me quote from the opening, the preface, so that people get that same sense that I was just now using a lot of words to say. It says, this is the piece of paper that would be handed to a street performer, a new guy in town, presumably, who hasn't seen them yet, sets up, puts his guitar, opens his case, and he doesn't know what's going to happen. You know, a lot of towns, most towns in America, it's illegal. I mean, they'll mess with you. You know, you can fight it in the courts. In some states, you'll win. Some states, it's undecided. But in Santa Cruz, presumably, when you set up, somebody, myself or another performer or one of the hospitality people or somebody will hand you a copy of the guidelines, which says the following: Dear performer, in 1980, 35 Santa Cruz street performers met to address a proposal by city officials to pass laws that would ban or severely restrict street performing in Santa Cruz. In an effort to avoid inflexible laws, the performers proposed instead to come to an agreement that recognized the rights of performers, people working in the businesses, downtown residents, and others who use the downtown. 35 street performers came to consensus on those guidelines, and agreement was reached with merchants, the Downtown Neighbors Association, the City Council, and other interested parties. A few times since, performers have met with representatives of the Downtown Association, city officials, and others to update the agreement. The following list of voluntary guidelines represents that agreement. We believe that these guidelines reflect the unwritten rules that street performers have worked with for centuries. Street performing is at least as old as stores. And that's followed by small blocks that address the following issues: hourly rotation, blocking pedestrian traffic, spacing, downtown residents, and contributions. And very briefly, hourly rotation, we're saying if somebody wants you to move, the merchant, the person working in the store, the downtown resident, another performer who wants the spot, if somebody wants you to move, then everybody agrees you've got an hour in the spot before you go. Okay, that's the one most often used. What we're saying is, you know, sometimes, you know, the kid working in the record store and he's playing his own stuff, or the jeweler and they prefer silence and they prefer you not to be in front of their store. What we're saying to them is, you can handle it for an hour. Okay, you don't like the music, I don't care. You can handle it for an hour. They'll move after an hour if you go out and tell them that you're interested in them doing that.
So that's not a law, that is an agreement, right?
No, that's correct. All of these things are only voluntary agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And then blocking pedestrian traffic, we're saying, you know, some of the really good acts in particular, you know, will gather a big crowd that will then block the passage along the sidewalk or block entrance to the shop. And in that situation, that they said, well, we have to have a law to deal with that. We're saying, look, if they're standing there watching the performer's in a unique situation, he can talk to them. We're encouraging that performer to do just that. Tell them to leave the way open, you know. Mm-hmm. Tell them to leave a way for people to pass through. Tell them to get away from the guy's entrance, you know. Otherwise, you know, there will be a cop. There probably is a law on that one, you know. So we're encouraging the performer to be conscious of that fact. Otherwise, you're just going to draw heat along with your big crowd, and they're going to move them before you get the hat around. Spacing, we suggest that all performers be spaced out along the hall.
All right, now we're talking.
Yeah, that's what we thought.
Sounds like the city council and the performers share something here.
The idea being that you're not set up too close to somebody else who's already playing. Mm-hmm. And then they suggested, somebody said, well, that should be three on every block or fewer, or one per... No. Listen, it depends. If the guy's playing a hammer dulcimer... You still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah. If your guy's playing a hammer dulcimer, you can just, you know, pull on down the way over there and just make it so that your sound... If he's playing a bagpipe, you're going to have to leave them all... No, you're going to have to go a bit further down. Conga drums are louder, and, you know, their sound runs further, but it depends, you know, so just be conscious of it. What we were trying to avoid was inflexible laws. You know, it doesn't make sense to try and nail it down. These things vary. So that's the benefit of voluntary guidelines over... A rule where every 50 feet people, but it's nonsense. It doesn't apply to the situation. Downtown residents, and this, let me quote from this one because it's coming up now. Downtown residents, it says, it is recognized that we share the downtown area with downtown residents. When he was still alive and active on behalf of the rights of street performers, Tom Scribner, the street performer whose statue still entertains on Pacific Avenue, asked that we respect his and other residents' need for sleep. The city has a curfew on noise disturbance. From 10 p.m. till 8 a.m., musicians are in danger of being cited under this ordinance. So this was us drawing the attention of the performer to the fact that those are hotels over there. I mean, really, literally, a lot of performers didn't know that. You know, you come into town, you're looking around at what shops there are, you're not really looking up. Sometimes they don't know that they're playing across the street from... You know, some people who are interested in napping, or some people who were just tired of hearing your set three times through. You know, there are more people than just the shop owners now involved. There are these people who live downtown. A lot of them are elderly. A lot of them, you know, nap in the afternoon. A lot of them go to sleep early at night. They can't rule downtown, but, you know, if you're trying to be friendly and neighborly and entertain people, you might want to take that into consideration as you set up and as you consider moving along. So, we were just pointing out to them that, anyway, there is a law that takes effect at 10 p.m. That could be used against you. Let me just do the one more, and then I know we're going to back up and discuss that. One more on the guidelines is contributions, in which we say offensive vocal solicitation. You know, I mean, you stand there playing guitar, and it happens, you know, some people, it's very rare, I have to say, among the performers, that somebody playing an instrument will then be... You know, say, hey, come on, put some money in a hat. What the hell's the matter with you? I mean, it very rarely happens, but it's often cited, from, you know, among people who, you know, don't pay attention to what's going on, but they assume there's, like, really bad and offensive and rude things that need to be addressed out there. And so we say to the performer, offensive vocal solicitation is not only rude behavior that works against all street performers, but is not very good for tips either. You know, an open instrument case or other receptacle is... considered appropriate. So that's just a truth. A performer playing and barking at the people walking by to give them money will do about as well as a panhandler who's barking at people walking by asking for money. So
those are the guidelines.
That's it. Let me just read to you the quote at the very bottom, just because it's kind of cool. This is from Artis, the Spoon Man, and a noted street performer who gathers huge crowds when he comes through town and is more recently got some hot attention in the entertainment world. Plays musical spoons, but he's like amazing. He says, sidewalk entertainment has no cover charge, there is no age limit, no dress code, and no minimum drink. And it's not plugged into any nuclear power plant or any other source of power but natural human energy.
Mm-hmm. Nicely said.
Yeah.
Well, you've been traveling around the country going to different gigs as a bubble man. And you also are in touch with a lot of performers who play Santa Cruz occasionally, and you're out on the streets of Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
What's in the last couple of years, has the street performing scene improved, let's say in different cities throughout the country for street performers? Do you have any general sense of whether there's a positive or negative flow happening here?
Well, you know, I would say there was a golden age of street performing that has passed us, but that's not to denigrate what's happening in street performing. There's also this constant hum and beat that's always been there and continues to be there. Folk singers who are, you know, speaking the message to the people. I think Phil Free's a good example. That continue to be out there and tell the people the news, you know, the current news. Always the most difficult for people to hear, the current news. I mean, better if you sang a little bit of some of the old folk songs about the old issues that we have all come to agree on by now, you know. The war was bad, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah, let's play some of those. And I actually love that. I mean, the Utah Phillips says the long memory is the most radical thing in the world. However, the most controversial ones, of course, are the ones who are going to be out there and sing about the current situation, the local situation, the topical event. And so they're always the ones who are going to stir the pot the most.
Take the heat.
Take the heat. And that's going on. I'd say right now, see, there was a time when there were all these, I don't know, in Santa Cruz and elsewhere, there were a lot more jugglers and, you know, maybe it was this hippie thing that happened, you know. I was doing bubbles, the spoon man was playing spoons, and I don't know, there were people in unicycles and stilts, and that still happens to some extent, but it's become commercialized in a lot of towns. You'll see it in San Francisco, but the rules are outrageous. I mean, those people are hired now to do those acts at the cannery and at the... I mean, they're wonderful. I'm not putting them down either. I go there to watch them entertain the tourists. That's a lovely thing. But that's, you know, that's not probably...
It's different.
Yeah, major part of what's going on the streets right now. But sometimes when the merchants or other members of the community will ask me about that, well, you know, I mean, it was different when the Karamazovs were on the streets here, but now, well, now what? Now you want to pass laws that make it so that they'll... You know, when the golden age returns, it'll never come back here, because you'll have laws against it. You'll have rules. You'll be so restrictive that you keep, you know, the good acts away, the ones that don't have to play the streets. I think that would be a mistake on their part. And it would be a mistake here and now with the people who are doing what they're doing. I mean, in truth, when we first formed the Street Performers Guild to come up with these guidelines, I have to say, among a number of the street performers, there was the idea of a guild in the old sense, which was to protect the artisans against those who are less skilled, right? And so they said, well, let's separate ourselves from these, you know, people who are playing guitar and aren't very good at it, or the juggler who can't juggle very well, or let's, you know, isolate ourselves from this. However, there was a stronger movement among the street performers to protect the right of free expression on the streets and to allow that there be bad acts on the street. Let's fight for the right to have bad acts, because that's where good acts come from, right? Nobody starts out being good. They always start out being bad. And how do you get from bad to good? It's by doing it and doing it and doing it. And where can you do that? There used to be like vaudeville, and they'd have Monday nights you could play and, you know, and get better. Or there was a spot on the bill where they had a bad act, you know, who was working on his stuff. Mm-hmm. Now there is nothing like that. And so spontaneously, it took to the streets in the late 60s through the 70s, 80s still. People who were working out their stuff, you know, took to the streets to start doing it, and...
You see that still happening?
Absolutely, sure. I mean, Donnie's getting better, isn't he? You know, the ventriloquist, juggler, singer, I'm not sure. Donnie's back in town, by the way. And sure, you get better. I mean, it's not an easy life out on the streets, despite what some people think. It's not easy, and so you get better or you quit doing it. You know, that's the choice.
Right. Well, you know, we have a street performer who is, in fact, leading the City Hall Sleepout. Dan Hopkins is a juggler, and he spends a lot of his time teaching people how to juggle there at the at the City Hall Sleepout. Just a quick plug for Dragon's Heart Dan. you know, I want to suggest something to you. You know, you live pretty near the secret studio, and I think you know where it is, right?
Actually, I don't. I know the block it's on, but I'm not sure how it fits into that scene.
Oh, because I was hoping to get you actually into the studio, because I think it would be great if we could have people call in and ask us both questions, or at least ask you questions, where you could respond, not simply... I mean, I think we're doing good as it is. I think this is a very informative interchange, but the problem is that we can't have anybody else on this, because there's only one phone line coming in. And of course, I can't instruct you. Actually, I can instruct you. I'm gonna give you dead air time. Is it possible you could come into the studio? Is that have you got time now?
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we continue some of this for a little while, and then you're gonna do what? You're gonna give them dead air time while you tell me how to get there.
Well, I'm gonna tell you right now that. Okay, so here we are back again. I've given the secret information to Tom here. By the way, if anybody does want to...
Who is it secret from, exactly? I mean, you know, the bad guys know.
Yeah, everybody
knows.
Like, it's ridiculous.
It's like your pals and the bad guys know, and then it's secret from the rest of them.
It's an open secret. Actually, anybody wants to be on this, on my show, just has to meet me at the... Taco Bell at 9:45 on Mondays and Fridays, and I will take you to the secret location. So, if you're interested, that's
so
how
agents.
You get to, so agents, take note. FCC people, you know,
just meet me at the Taco Bell.
Dress
and
like
I'll
a poor person,
you.
And you can join the group.
When they want to do the raid, they can just meet you at the Taco Bell,
right?
In uniform,
in
with
uniform.
Their stuff,
right? And I will. Well, I don't know about that, but yeah. Well, so you're going to be coming in, and we could continue this conversation live.
Yeah, we could do that. You want that right now, huh?
Well, as soon as you can, because I think I'm going to go until 1, but there's a chance we may have to cut off at 12, so I'd like to be able to continue the conversation as long as we can.
Okay, sure, I'll...
Come on down.
I'll just leave my tax stuff and such behind.
Dump your taxes and come on down to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay, see you soon.
All right, Tom.
Bye.
So, we have... We have a distinguished guest, hopefully, to wending his way over to the studio if he's not stopped by agents of the law or lured away by the temptation to help assist bad acts that he finds on the streets between here and there. A couple of quick things. The latest flyer, if people are interested, the latest update is called, appropriately enough, April Update. You can find a description of what's going on with the City Hall Sleepout by going by the City Hall Sleepout and taking one of these flyers, which... frequently is in a little box that says take one and next to a stuffed animal seated near the City Hall entrance. But there has been some flack from Mayor Rotkin and Chief Belcher and other police officers on this situation where, you, for example, there's been an attack on signs leaned up against city property, if you can believe that. So you may have to ask people for this update. Now, the update has one mistake, and I'm going to clarify it and then also give you some upcoming court dates that might interest you. On Wednesday, April 17th, day after tomorrow, at 8:30 a.m. in Department 1, Nikki, whom I call Nightwing Nikki, but whose name on the court calendar is Faith Ian, and Mooncat, whose legal name is James Bossy, are going to go in for the first misdemeanor sleep crime hearing. It's a very important situation. No time in the past 20 years, during which this sleeping ban law has been in effect since 1978, have they ever taken to court a sleeping misdemeanor charge, because that would mean a jury trial and a public defender. Well, apparently, they've stated, or the city attorney has stated to Robert Flory, that they're going to be doing that. And so if you're interested in seeing how far they're going to carry this charade, and this is going to cost them tens of thousands of dollars to do these trials, go to Department 1 at 8:30 on Wednesday, and that's Tom Kelly's court, and look for the cases of Faith Ian and James Bossy, and you'll probably see a few familiar faces there if you've been following the sleep out. That's 8:30, Department 1, on April 17th for the pretrial motions hearing for misdemeanor sleep crime. Then on Thursday, the next day, April 18th at 8:30, also in Department 1, Sandpaper Sandria Roth, Dragonheart Dan Hopkins, and Red Top Robert Flory are going to be appearing again to do arraignments for sleeping tickets. On Friday, there's going to be a huge arraignment where a man whom I call Shit Kicker Sean Alimi, who's one of the two originators of the rally at City Hall, of the sleep out, he'll be showing up with Robert Flory to put literally dozens of tickets into arraignment dates. And finally, on Friday at 8:30 in the morning, that is Friday, I'm sorry, Friday we got Sean Alimi and Robert Flory. So again, Wednesday at 8:30, it's Faith Ian and James Bossy in the first ever misdemeanor sleep crime pretrial. On Thursday at 8:30, it's Sandpaper Sandria Roth, Dan Hopkins, and Robert Flory for many sleeping ticket arraignments, and even more sleeping ticket arraignments the next day, the same time at 8:30, this time in Department 3, Sean Alimi and Robert Flory. You want to be there to support these people. A lot of this is technical stuff. They go in to get arraignments, which simply means to get a court date for a trial. And there's not much that happens other than the assignment of court dates. But the interesting thing will be Wednesday at 8:30, will the city attorney press on with the sleeping crime misdemeanor charges? If so, that'll be an unusual thing, and the subject of lots of publicity, at least from this radio station. We've got an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I never hear you guys talk about the sleeping ban. What do you mean?
What do I mean about the sleeping ban?
No, I was just kidding.
Okay, you're just kidding. Yeah. I thought somebody else was just kidding.
Well, there's a couple people that are just kidding. No, but really.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking earlier about, you were reading the performer guidelines,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to comment on that. Unfortunately, I have a million people in my that live in my house, so
well,
it's hard to get on the phone.
It's fortuitous you're calling in, Phil, because we have in the studio with us the notorious, the one, the only, Uncle Tom Noddy here.
What?
Tom.
Wow, what did he get? Does he have a transporter beam or something?
We beamed him over, actually.
That's incredible.
We beamed him up. Say hello, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Phil.
I wanted to bring up that, the hour clause on the street performer's guidelines only seems to be being honored by the downtown hosts. They're not honored by the Santa Cruz Police Department, as far as I can tell, and I have proof. And the only reason, to my knowledge, that the hosts are even honoring that particular portion of the agreement is due to harassment by myself, by yourself, and by yourself, and a couple other street musicians. Robert, you did some tabling out front when we were
the
turning
downtown.
Up the heat on the downtown hosts, and I understand Tom was my representative at some meetings to discuss me, and the hour clause, and we hammered that out. We've got gotten the hosts to pretty much honor that agreement, but it doesn't seem to be binding on the police. They can pretty much do what they want at the time they want. Skidmark Bob just went to jail the other day, and he didn't get an hour to play. So we're called upon to honor these agreements and to be honorable people, but we're not dealing with honorable people that have to follow any code, it seems. They just took a man's guitar away, and they kept it for a week.
This is Bob's guitar.
Yes, they took his freedom away. They stop us. We're talking about guys that making a political statement, doing a free speech thing out there. You can be stopped when you get that ticket, and you have to stop, or you can go to jail, or you could just go to jail. Whatever the case, they can stop you right there. Your freedom of speech is taken away, and you may not get your day in court. They may drop the charges. But what about the freedom? What about the lost time? What about the lost political speech? The lost free speech that already happened? We have no recourse to reclaim that. And the police have nobody to answer to when they do that. And they want to stop you from playing. They can stop you from playing. They can. If they give you a ticket and you don't do it, then they can just take you away and never answer about it. All they have to do is drop the charges.
You know, Phil, this was something that I was arguing with Tom about the other day, and Tom has a rather interesting response to this. Tom, do you want to give your thoughts on this?
Well, actually, I don't remember what my response was. It's interesting today.
Well,
the audience, as it was
it better
today.
Be. That's all I can say.
Okay, well, first, there were really two things. We insisted that...
Hang on, the mic. Your mic has been down. Go ahead. Speak again.
Much better.
Oh, good. Well, what I was saying to Robert was I hope that my response is as interesting to the audience as it was to him, although I don't remember what my response to him was at the time. So I'll go on this way and say there really needs to be two, and people need to look at this at two levels, because we insisted on it when we put forward the street performers' guidelines. We did not want these to be enforced as laws. We don't want this to be the bottom line. This is not a law. This is not the way that the police should enforce it. There are things in our guidelines that we would agree with our neighbors about. You know, if the guy next door to you plays some funky old country music that you don't like, there's no law against that. But nonetheless, you can go over and say, hey, do you mind not playing that at least, the hours that I'm home? And you can make agreements with your neighbors that you would not want to see enforced as law. That's what we did when we put together the guidelines. We asked that that neighbors respect a certain agreement, and we'll give them things that we would fight if they tried to put into law. The one-hour rotation may not be one of the reasonable restrictions on, you know, reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions that a court would respect. We might fight against that if they tried to make a law on it. It's not clear whether we would or not. But so these guidelines are a voluntary agreement, and of course it doesn't restrict the police. If they want to violate the sense of the guidelines, and if they do that on a consistent basis, they're going to lose the benefits, you know, for the merchants. And in the long run, they haven't for 16 years enforced that in such a way that we're ready to, well, I don't know. When I say we, I mean you guys are out on the streets now. I'm not performing on the streets, but if you want to test, you know, and get only what we can get as rights, you know, it's a court question. Can you sing fuck on the street? That's a fascinating question to me, you know. And if somebody wants to take that into court and test it, here we go. You know, can you, how about when you sing a song about hospitality Nazis, you know, and if they're insulted by that, is that disturbing the peace? Interesting question. I'll follow that case all the way through the courts. I'm fascinated by how the courts will deal with a question like that.
But if you can get it to court.
Yeah, I understand. But let me deal with it on two levels. Now, however, that doesn't deal with the street performers' guidelines, which is just this friendly agreement, and anybody who wants to be unfriendly enough can ruin, you know, put an end to that kind of way that we do this. But you have a very important point, I think. Your problem is you guys are testing the law. You're pushing the limits of these free speech questions out there. You're asking whether or not, you can say this stuff. Is that disturbing the peace? They give you a ticket for disturbing the peace. Perfect. You've got your test case. Now here it goes into court, and then they drop it so that you can never test it. So that they're only running you. They're only using it to harass you on the streets. There are lawyers who will take that as, you know. I mean, what you need is an injunction against the police to prevent them from doing that. I mean, you know this. I mean, this is the. You look to the ACLU, and if they won't help you, you look to. There are a couple of lawyers in town who might well. Take it on. You know, you need to set up a nice test case. I mean,
well, I like the idea of the guidelines. I like the idea of people working out things with people before having to call in fascists, to call in cops, to call in other officials to deal with your problem.